I bought a couch from a friend.
Oh, look, here's a nickel. You Italian?
Here, pull.
Wow, this is disgusting. Hey there, worker guy. Easy, psycho. Should we dance? A cold plate of vinegar over there. Hungry. You know what you can eat? COVID.
Idiots, a socialist talk podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Monterullo, joined here by my co-host, Comrade Dracula. Comrade, what's going on?
You didn't mention the thing.
I was going to say it right after you.
Let's do it over. I wanted you to announce it like in the actual initial introduction to like, welcome to Move Left, Idiots.
Yeah,
for a very special 300th, whatever. I don't know, just because it's, you know, special. It's more special if you say it, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Welcome to Move Left, Idiots, a socialist talk podcast. I'm your co-host, Anthony Monterullo. Welcome to a very special 300th episode. It is very hard to break my mental verbal routine of the exact same thing that I always say at the top of this show, which is why this is the second time I'm recording this. I'm joined here by my co-host, Comrade Dracula. Comrade, what's going on?
You got to improv sometimes. 300th episode. I have not been here for all 300 episodes, but I started, I think, around episode 35 or so. So it's been a long road.
I don't even remember like time-wise what it was.
I feel like, yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, it was years ago. But yeah, we reached the Zack Snyder number. We did it.
Now we can all get killed by fucking Xerxes and
in slow motion footage that looks like it's a fucking cutscene from a PS3.
Right, we're gonna inject HGH into our veins on air, and then we're gonna go and we're gonna just kill each other and really washed out, sort of black and white, but not really.
You got to work hard to get killed by just some vaguely homosexually threatening Iranians.
Like vaguely Persian looking person. Like that was the casting, you know,
that was
the casting note that they put out. Probably.
It was a very deliberate thing they did to feed off of, you know, let's go kill all the Arab type sentiment that was happening.
Oh, 100,000%.
Yeah.
I mean, 100,000%. So
100,000%.
Yeah. Yep. So, and we're going to, you know, speaking of some movies, we're going to get into a lot of interesting things going on in the world of movies that may not even be related to movies.
I had a little fact here I just learned, about Oppenheimer, the actual Oppenheimer. Not many people know this, but Oppenheimer originally created the atom bomb to blow up the Titanic. Did you know that?
What? I thought you were like, for a half second, I was like, wait, what? And then I was thinking the logistics of like getting the bomb like
the thing was they didn't want to wait to find the Titanic to start figuring out ways to blow it up, right? So
they knew all the billionaires that whose lives would tragically, you know, be lost in search of a quick photo op with the Titanic.
Yeah. So like, it's just a shame that Oppenheimer didn't live long enough for them to actually find the Titanic in 1985. But it was his true dream. Japan was just a little side project of his. That wasn't really his true passion.
Yeah, right. That was unfortunate. Man, I can't wait to see that fucking movie.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. We're going to talk a little more about that later and some labor stuff regarding that and other movies. But speaking of things that I didn't know could exist, you clearly have seen the pictures of the Vegas orb. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's incredible. I mean, so again, you know, obviously it's like it's one of those things where I didn't know about this at all. And I'm sure most people who weren't like living in Las Vegas didn't realize this was like a thing that was happening. And it's just all of a sudden one day, hey, by the way, there's this giant fucking orb in Las Vegas that's entirely made of video screens inside and out. And it's the craziest thing you've ever fucking seen. And
it look, is.
I'm a man. I'm an American man. Like, I'm not, you know, sure, you know, it's probably a gross fucking, you know, monument to capitalism in a lot of ways. And I'm sure it costs taxpayers a bunch of money. But you're crazy if you think I'm going to look at a giant fucking round television and not be like, that's the coolest thing I've ever fucking seen. Like,
yeah,
it's just it's impossible for me not to look at that thing and be like, holy shit. Imagine fucking being on the inside and watching like a movie or a fucking show with an immersive video going the entire length of like the wall up through the ceiling, up around you. Like
the screen looks like it's literally the size of a football field. Like IMAX is nothing incredible compared to this.
Right.
Now. Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, I looked this up and actually I don't believe it received any taxpayer subsidies at all.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Madison Square Garden is who built this thing and owns it. Well, there's a different company that like, you know, it's called like Sphere Entertainment Incorporated or something which I'm sure is just like a shell
LLC,
company. But it said that Madison Square Garden's paying for all this out of pocket.
Oh, all right.
And they spent twice what they originally thought to, and they're just like, whatever, we own casinos. We'll just keep fucking printing money.
Hey, good for them. You know, it's not like this is being put. I mean, Las Vegas is just a giant fucking
neon
fake city. It's not like it's like you're ruining any sort of, you know, if you live in Vegas, this is what you signed up for. I mean, sometime after the fucking you know, pyramid and then, you know, a medieval castle themed hotel pops up. You're like,
right.
Yeah, maybe this is not quite the Vegas I remember.
It's just the sheer size of it. I'm looking at the thing going, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I see there's a highway next to it that it's dwarfed by.
Right. There's just miniature.
oh my God, it's the size of a small moon.
Yeah.
I looked it up. It's 366 feet tall. And, you know, because it's, you know, sort of like if you think of the sphere, it's sort of, you know, coming up out of the ground, but it's 516 feet across. Right. So if it was actually just like a ball sitting completely up on top of the ground, it would be 516 feet tall. That's how fucking big it is. It's something like 580,000 square feet of LED lights on the outside.
Jesus Christ.
Like it's just, I mean, obviously, LED lights don't pull that much power, but there's millions and millions of lights on it. So it's probably not very carbon friendly. But, you know, I mean, it's not like there's going to be a lot of these things. I did read that this company wants to build another one in London. And people in London are not happy because London is not Vegas.
No, that would be a fucking eyesore. I mean,
If you imagine living right next to it and you're just like constantly ever-changing light being beamed in your house.
Having a look at the people of London is bad enough if you live in London. Imagine having a look at the fucking, you know, the fucking miserable, like, fishy, pale, translucent, white, bad teeth fucking white people that live in London.
They might finally get a tan. But, you know, there's not many people that live anywhere near the strip in Las Vegas, but that do, you imagine that like they're very used to the neon lights all through the night, and that's probably a thing they like and they work there too. I didn't really know that I needed a thing like this, and then it just appeared and I'm like, that's fucking amazing. I've never seen a thing that amazed me quite this much.
Yeah, I would love to see something there. That seems like it would be a really interesting experience. Really incredible.
The first film they're going to show there is actually being directed by Darren Aronofsky. It's being shot on 16K cameras.
Yeah.
And it's specifically being shot for this venue. And I looked up the tickets because this thing is going to start playing. The film is going to start playing in October. And the tickets range from like $49 up to $200. And I'm like, that's pretty reasonable for seeing something that's going to be a once in a lifetime thing that you've never seen before, and is pretty comparable to tickets for other Vegas shows too. So I'm sure they're going to have multiple screenings a day for whatever they're doing there. The fucking band U2 is going to kick off their first month, so it's like they're going to be
all tragic
shitty corporate band in residency there. Apparently there's something like over 100,000 separate speakers inside the theater. So it's going to be interesting. I was listening to an interview with The Edge from U2 and he was kind of talking about how, you know, whenever they, you know, play stadium shows, stadiums have really shitty acoustics because they're not designed for acoustics. They're designed for sports.
All the sound drifts and there's an echo and it doesn't reach the back, you know.
Right, right. So he's basically just, you know, he's kind of a douchebag rich guy, but he's sort of a sound perfectionist. So it'll be interesting to see what, you know, very wealthy musicians are able to create in this space.
I was curious because when you mentioned a 16K camera, I know how fucking expensive, like, even 1080p cameras were when I was shooting things. A 16K camera, Canon makes a mirrorless 16K camera, $99,999. So just a smidge under $100,000 for one 16K camera, which isn't even like grade.
I remember when the Phantom camera first came out that can shoot something like 5,000 frames a second. So you can do like extreme slow motion.
Insane slow motion. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I actually worked on a Nike commercial once as a production assistant, and we were doing that. And, you know, we'd have somebody like run down a track and do a pole vault.
Right.
And then play it back at like the slowest speed it could. And it was like almost imperceptible.
Wow.
Like you could have raindrops that were like just frozen in time, basically.
That's incredible.
And we'd play it back in the little, you know, video hut, and everybody was just blown away by it. So I hated working on that thing because the Nike guys were all douchebags, but it was still, it's still fun to play around with the camera.
Right.
That camera was like, I believe $200,000 at the time. And even Nike didn't own the camera. They rented it from someone else who did.
Yeah, right. Especially with tech that is always evolving, you don't spend that much unless you're like a mega, mega studio. You know, on tech like that, it's just,
and you don't want to maintain it. And if you're not using it, you know, that's why camera companies are, you know, constantly the ones who are, you know, maintaining the cameras and everything. But to do that, you still have to take out insurance to cover the complete replacement cost of the camera if it's a total loss.
Oh yeah.
And that's, so you might be a little, you know, independent film crew, you know, with a budget that has to insure, you know, upwards of, you know, several million dollars in location liability insurance. Yep. Right. And that's not cheap either.
No, it's definitely not. But
when you insure things for a very short amount of time, they jack the rate way up. You know, it's not like car insurance where you have it, you know, all the time. It's like, oh, we need insurance for just 2 weeks. It's like, okay, well, that's going to be, you know, 10 times the cost that it would be if it's stretched out over time. Details.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, right now I'm at my desk is probably as messy as it's ever been. It is piled with stacks of Blu-rays, both ones I had and ones I've recently ordered. I got a little paranoid when they started just like yeeting shit off of streaming services, like into oblivion, like things that were like produced by those streaming services where it's like, hey, you know, this thing you like and that you just rely on always being there because it was, you know, produced by fucking HBO, yeah, that's not even necessarily a guarantee anymore. If they decide that, you know, this thing that you know they made would be more beneficial to them to not have to pay residuals, which will lead into something else we're, you know, about to talk about. Maybe we'll just fucking get rid of it, and you know, take the hit, or take the tax write off, or what.
You started burning Blu-rays yourself.
So, well, I bought I actually did buy a Blu-ray burner, which was only like 80, I mean, it's $80, but like, you know what, honestly, to have a digital copy of all the shit that I've had previously, all my old DVDs and some of these other newer DVDs that I had, you know, I'll kind of keep a backup copy. There's that you've heard of Plex, right? Like the media, the computer, like on your computer.
I've heard of it. Yeah. I don't know if I remember what it is though.
So basically like if you get Plex, and I think it's like $5. I don't even remember, but I think it might be like $5 a month. But basically, it allows you to use like files that you have saved on your computer and like build your own media library where it's got like a Netflix type interface where it's got all the album art and and just like it'll automatically, if you title the title of your file correctly, it'll find the metadata and pull it all in. So it'll give you all the, you know, directed by, acted, here's the poster, here's some alternative posters if you don't like the main one. And it's just fun, and you can watch it on any like of your, you know, streaming shit, so you can watch it on your TV or your phone or whatever.
You can kind of curate your own little Criterion collection on your thing. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I've been really like building that out and beefing that out, but yeah, beefing, you can't trust these.
That's great.
but you can't trust these motherfuckers anymore. You never could, but it's just become so nakedly capitalistic. And obvious in the last couple of years, it seemed like, especially. I think the kind of major dip that they took at the beginning of COVID really ramped up a lot of this horrendous shit we're seeing, coupled with the sort of rapid advancement in AI technology we're seeing. So it really seems a lot more prevalent than it ever even was, or at least a lot more evident than it ever even was.
Well, they all decided they needed to compete with Netflix, and then it bit them in the ass because now they're losing money hand over fist at the box office.
Right.
So they did this to themselves, these studios.
Oh, 100%. It's always, anytime these sorts of like lulls happen, it's always their own fault. And, you know, they rode the wave too long. They oversaturated the market with just garbage, mindless, not well thought out or well written superhero movies for fucking years. I mean, to the point where they were putting out, you could fucking sneeze and there was a new Marvel movie coming out. There were like four, five, six a year, and TV shows. And it's like, the reason that they were successful is because it was, you know, the first kind of like wave of superhero movies came at a really down time for kind of big budget movies. And it was filling a marketplace void, but it also was only like one big movie a year, maybe two. And then they just completely fucking, you know, drove it into the ground where people just actively groan and fucking avoid these movies now. But they still have to spend $300 million to make them because they're all CG, you know, just garbage. Well,
they're also, you know, these executives are demanding, you know, reshoots and, you know, recasting, and just like they're bloating these movies in ways they don't need to be, to the point where, you know, if they don't make $1 billion, they're going to lose money.
It's crazy. A movie can make $100 million and be like, this is the biggest box office flop of all time. You know,
Well, you know, and it's, they think that they spent $300 million to make Indiana Jones 5. And if they sunk that much money into it, they spent at least another $150 million on marketing.
Oh, yeah.
So just the idea that it has to make $500 million to break even, you know, and it's like a movie nobody wanted to see.
Nobody asked for it. Like,
nobody asked for it.
After that last one, like, nobody was like, hey, you know what I want is one more of these. Like, is Shia busy? Can we get him back? Like, is, you know, like, it's just nobody was fucking asking for that.
Right. And they did the same thing that, you know, everyone had a problem with Star Wars, was basically taking the hero and turning them into an old grizzled grumpy guy and then replacing him with a, you know, Mary Sue, basically, that no one really liked the character because she had no arc, you know, because Kathleen Kennedy thinks that women should be perfect from the first moment they pop on screen. And it's like, okay, if that's not an interesting character, There's no growth to the character. There's no flaws. That's a boring character. Everyone loves Game of Thrones because all those motherfuckers had tons of flaws.
It's so funny because, and you know, we've talked about The Last Jedi, and now I think that's the only good fucking Star Wars movie to come out of that. Well, no, I'm sorry, not the only good of the three, you know, new Star Wars trilogy to come out of that, because they actually did take creative risks. But it's funny that Lucasfilm saw the reaction to that and saw the negative reaction to de-aged Mark Hamill in The Mandalorian. It's like, hey, let's take the worst of both worlds. Let's take the thing that pissed off this segment of fans and the thing that pissed off this segment of fans and push it into one movie and fucking make everybody furious. Like, it's just like, nobody will be happy with this.
Yeah. And then we'll do Andor and it'll be the best thing we've ever made, but it'll be too late because nobody cares anymore.
Right. And you know, I'll be there no matter what, Andor season two, but
yeah,
I'm very, by the way, very miffed that got no love at the Emmys, because of all the genre, like, I enjoy The Last of Us. There's no way fucking Andor shouldn't be getting nominations over The Last of Us for drama series or for, you know, even just for the acting performances.
Especially because it's an original story, not just an adaptation of existing material, too.
Right, which was pretty beat for beat for the most part. I mean, you know, it's good on the guy who wrote the original one, but it's just, Andor, the fucking performances from Andy Serkis could absolutely have won Best Supporting Actor for his one and a half or two episodes or whatever. Fucking Stellan Skarsgård, like, it was just everyone in that show was amazing.
Phenomenal, and the writing too. I mean, every single character in that show, I would have watched a whole show about just them.
Yep.
Every single person.
The young Karl Marx and Space Kid. I would have absolutely watched a show about him like living and then going on to start the fucking revolution.
The fucking waif from Game of Thrones. Her character was great. There was depth there. You know, it's that's because they had good writers. They had really good writers, right? And it's like you think that an AI is going to write a show that good.
An AI is never going to have politics that a jaded human would have. That was the other big thing that it had in its favor is that when you actually listen to Tony Gilroy, you know, in interviews, it's clear like he's not only like left, but like actual left, not like Hollywood left. So it very much infuses the way he approached that story.
He literally had a cop being beaten to death with a brick made from the remains of an old lady who told him. And did you know the original line was supposed to be "fuck the empire," but Disney wouldn't do it.
I saw that. Yeah. Bad fucking. It's Disney
could have been Star Wars' first F-bomb and redeemed it in so many more ways.
I hopefully they'll realize in season two that with how well received that show was that it deserved it. But yeah, that would have been. Oh man, and that just that whole fucking episode and the episode, maybe the best three episode arc of that I saw of a television show in a long, long fucking time.
Especially for a single, you know, almost limited series number of episodes too.
Yeah, that one way out to the second to last episode to the light. Like, I was just what a fucking show. Damn, so
there are many Andor review that we never actually did.
We, you know, before season two premieres, we'll do a season one recap because. I'd love to rewatch that at some point, but
well, it's. I was watching a video with a guy on a YouTuber today who does movie reviews, but he also does like industry analysis, and was talking about just the outright open contempt that the studio executives have for their own workers, for their own writers, for their own actors. Oh, right now,
it's very obvious. Right now, yeah,
it's. And his analogy was, you know, it used to be the executives would smile at you with a knife behind their back, but now they have a knife in each hand and they're both at their throat, at the actor's throats, at the writer's throats.
Right.
And it couldn't be more clear. This was an interview with Disney CEO Bob Iger from this little billionaire camp they all went to. All the executives flew their private jets to go hang out at this little camp together rather than being engaged in negotiations. So again, this is on them. They left the bargaining table. And they've decided not to come back. And we'll talk a little bit more about their strategy there in a second. But so Bob Iger, Disney CEO, who earns something like $26 million a year, said the disruption of strikes is disturbing to him. It's disturbing to him. Meanwhile, getting paid tens of millions of dollars a year.
No, I'm sure it keeps him up at night thinking about how he's going to fucking make his next, you know, mortgage payment. I'm sure that's
literally the fucking the meme of Woody Harrelson, you know, wiping his tears with dollar bills.
So you know, it's just incredible. We have a lot of fun audio to play from this because you know, the one great thing about actors is they're rich enough, a lot of them, where they don't really have to give a shit and they can kind of say what they feel. So the real good ones are actually coming out. I mean, I haven't seen anyone really come out like on the wrong side of this. I'm sure the ones that don't really believe in it are kind of keeping to themselves, which whatever, but there's been a lot of very pro union.
I want to speak to that a little bit. Because the thing that people need to remember, because a lot of people, I think, have this idea that, well, these are all just rich Hollywood celebrities. They already have millions. You know, this is just them being spoiled. There's 160,000 members of the Screen Actors Guild. There's a small handful of them that are rich celebrities. I mean, I think people realize just like, you know, we talked about all the background actors. It's this thing where one of the proposals the executives are making is for, you know, background actors that rather than getting recast for multiple movies, they would just get paid for one day of work in which their entire body is going to be scanned. And then the studio would own the rights to the scan of them and can use it in any way they want to in perpetuity, which means forever. So we just need to make a copy of you and then have the AI put you into the background of wherever we want to put you. And they said that was a groundbreaking new technology.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. It's just, again,
And this is, I mean, this is the kind of thing, like, you know, all everyone goes to Hollywood with the dream of becoming the next Brad Pitt. There's only going to be about maybe a dozen of those people every few years that get up to that level. Right. So everybody else is still working in Hollywood, but they're working, you know, catering. They're working, you know, they're production assistant. They're, you know, an electrician, a plumber, you know, whatever it has to be built, you know, has to have all those things on set. And these people don't make a lot of money. There's a reason why there's so much solidarity in the industry of Hollywood, because before they had the unions, it was just nonstop exploitation. You got to watch that movie. What the fuck is the name of it? Just came out with Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie about the
Babylon.
Yeah. About the last couple years of the silent era. And like literally like they're just filming like 18 different movies all in the same lot because there's right. no sound. So there's no, you know, there's no sound.
You don't have to worry about people bleeding into it from next door. Right. You know, you could just right. fucking yeah.
And you know, there was no, you know, special effects. So like literally if you wanted to have a Roman battle, you had to have hundreds of people beating the shit out of each other.
No,
right? they didn't have stunts coordinators back then. It was just, no, we really need you to hit each other.
which is why things look better from years ago where we had no fucking technology or very little technology, because you actually had to fucking film it. That's why Terminator 2 still is one of the best looking action, maybe the best looking action movie of all time, because James Cameron really drove a fucking semi truck off a bridge. James Cameron really blew up a fucking tanker. Like you can't CGI this shit.
Did you see that he in like one of the last, there's like a million editions of Terminator 2 out there, but the last DVD edition, James Cameron put the windows back into the semi truck.
Did he really?
Because when it crashes, both the sides of the windshield pop out. But then a moment later,
but then he punches it out after that, right?
Right. So that was funny. One of those things. Yeah. So in one of the last versions of the, like, you know, the Blu-ray or the 4K, whatever versions, the last one,
I literally just he digitally
put the windows back in the truck so it looks right.
There was like a six pack of it on sale when I was kind of doing my blow through of like, oh shit, what don't I have? And right. Like hard copy, not that Terminator is ever going to go away, but it's just nice to have a good like you know Blu-ray quality rip of it. So I did just buy that. So I'm going to have to check now when I rip this to see if the windows are in fact intact when that thing lands.
Right.
That's really funny though. But to your point, even the SAG members themselves, like I just did a little Googling, average SAG actor yearly pay in the United States is approximately $40,000. Which is 32% below the national average. So, like you said,
you try finding any apartment in Los Angeles for less than $2,000 a month.
Yeah, right.
And you will not find it.
No, absolutely not. That is poverty wage for
one of the reasons I live in Chicago is you can actually find affordable housing in the city.
Right.
So basically, you know, and obviously, you know, if you're Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt, you're not getting paid that much. You're going to negotiate your own contract to get, you know, millions and millions and millions. So right. They're going on strike, not for themselves. They're going on strike in solidarity with the rest of the union, who doesn't get paid very much money at all, even though they are still union.
Yeah.
So this is what a executive had to say about all the low wage rank and file people in the union going on strike. This is the AMPTP. That's the Association of Producers and Executives, basically their union, even though they're not a union. Said that they're basically going to wait this out. Like, and they have basically somebody anonymously said that they're gonna wait till the fall before they even think about coming back to the bargaining table. Right.
Yeah.
And the quote here is, the end game is to allow these things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their homes, a studio executive told Deadline. Acknowledging the cold as ice approach, several other sources reiterated the statement. One insider called it a cruel but necessary evil. So they don't care if you live or die.
No, of course not.
Is what they're saying to the union. And then they say, oh, the union's being unreasonable.
Yeah, and again, you know, much like the actors, writers, I think, in Hollywood make even less. Like, unless you're a top-tier writer who gets lucky and gets, you know, like a spec script picked up for something big budget that they're going to make, you're not making a lot of money every year. You have to hope that...
And especially, with these streaming shows, they're doing shorter and shorter seasons, and they're trying to hire less and less writers. basically having just like a writer's room of four people for, you know, half the normal length of a TV season. Right. And mm-hmm. and then on top of that, you know, they want to do AI scripts where they basically just have the AI write the whole thing, hand it off to four writers and they punch it up. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sure that's already happened.
Oh, yeah.
In certain places.
100%. I'm sure they're playing around with that right now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then they come out and they say things like they think that the writers should be able to have access to tools like that. To help them write better.
Right. That's they're just being courteous. I don't know why everyone's getting so bent out of shape. That's obviously all that they are trying to do.
What if we took the vanilla yogurt and turned it into vanilla mayonnaise? Just taking every idea and like what's the lowest common denominator of every good idea that we can, you know, have an AI churn out. So yeah, in light of this executive, unnamed executive, saying that the goal, the plan is to drag the strike out and not come back to the bargaining table until people are going homeless. This is what actor Ron Perlman had to say in response to that.
One thing before I get off this, the motherfucker who said we're going to keep this thing going until people start losing their houses and their apartments. Listen to me, motherfucker. There's a lot of ways to lose your house. Some of it is financial. Some of it is karma. And some of it is just figuring out who the fuck said that. And we know who said that. And where he fucking lives. There's a lot of ways to lose your house. You wish that on people. You wish that families starve while you're making $27 fucking million a year for creating nothing. Be careful, motherfucker. Be really careful. Because that's the kind of shit that stirs shit up. Peace out.
Huh. $27 million. That's a really specific number. That's actually the exact amount of money that Bob Iger makes every year.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. I've heard 26. I've heard 27. He's gotten a different amount every year that he's been the executive.
That was Ron Perlman's unsubtle way of being like, yeah, it's Bob Iger. We know you're your live motherfucker. Like, yeah, say that again. See what happens. Like,
yeah, I thought he would just, you know, I thought he was just going to imply arson, but I guess that's what the karma one was.
Yeah,
he's
heavily implied without being actionable, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he's one of these, you know, he's like, what's his name? The guy. Fucking Tucker Carlson, you fuck you. That guy?
Yeah, Michael Rapaport.
He's one of these guys that just has no filter. He's a fucking guy's guy. He doesn't give a... And he's, you know, he's probably over 70 years old now. He's made his money. He doesn't give a fuck who he pisses off.
He just channeled fucking Clay Morrow from Sons of Anarchy. That's his character just constantly would talk like that on Sons of Anarchy, but it's great to know that was very much just, you know, basically, hey, Ron, show up to set and just... You know, pretend you're in this universe and say what you would say.
Right. Well, you've seen Drive, right? Ryan Gosling.
Oh yeah, I forgot he said that too. Yeah, he's incredible. He's got a great fucking face for, you know.
He put him in a tracksuit and yeah, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So yeah, I tweeted out this. I said, if Ron Perlman burns down Bob Iger's mansion, I will personally bail him out of jail. And then I saw another tweet. This is from somebody else. Said, if Ron Perlman said that to me, I would flee the country. Like, of all the people you don't want threatening you, it's that guy.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah, so we have a couple other clips, too. So this was actually Sean Gunn, brother of James Gunn, who I'm sure you've seen in every James Gunn film because he likes to, you know, make sure his brother has it. Which, look, hey, I get it. You know, same with fucking... Ron Howard and his goofy brother, like you just
everybody.
You do that when you're a big director, you know. And
exactly.
it's only right, you know. You bring people with you. They bring
you
their
bring
friends.
People you know you can trust and work well with, and that ends up being just people you know and you like,
friends and family, right? Which is fine. Or if you're Martin Scorsese, it's, you know, Leo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, just the greatest modern actors, you know.
he started just making, you know, basically student films with De Niro. So like they got famous together, really.
No, and right. And that worked out. But yeah, now, you know, and that Quentin too did that. But now Quentin sort of, because he's the belle of the ball, gets to pick, you know, the Leos and the Brad Pitts of the world.
Right.
And fuck. But
and all those actors are all just lining up to work with him too. I mean, you remember all the things that fucking Django, help me out.
What? Jamie Foxx?
Yeah, Jamie Foxx. You know, first of all, Jamie Foxx's impersonation of Quentin Tarantino
is so
fucking hilarious.
His impersonation of everybody. It's crazy how good his impersonations are.
He is. Yeah, I've seen other ones too where I'm
his Trump is really good, like indistinguishable, like the voice, like, you know, but
you got to have a lot of talent. You got to have a lot of talent. Yeah. But he said he would work with Quentin Tarantino again in a heartbeat, you know. So clearly, you know, even though he's probably tyrannical on set, there are actors that, you know, like that craft.
Yeah. This is a clip from Sean Gunn. He was on the red carpet of something. I don't know what, but, you know, obviously they're doing red carpets right up until the kind of strike initiated, and then a bunch of people famously, you know, left, you know, the red carpet in solidarity. But here's a clip of him talking about the impending actor strike in solidarity with the WGA.
Talks about what a shame it is. He needs to remember that in 1980, CEOs like him made 30 times what the worker, what their lowest worker was making. Now Bob Iger makes 400 times what his lowest worker is. And I think that's a shame, Bob. And maybe you should take a look in the mirror and ask yourself, why is that? And not only why is that, is it okay? Is it morally okay? Is it ethically okay that you make that much more than your lowest worker? And if so, why? Why is that okay? If your response is that that's just the way business is done now, that's just the way corporations work now, well, that sucks and that makes you a person if that's your answer. So you should come up with a better answer than that.
Nope. Well, I guess we're not going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 4.
I love we had the exact same thought. That's fucking amazing, man. The balls to do that shit after you were just in and I mean balls in a good way, to do that shit after you were in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Be like, hey, you know Bob Iger, that CEO of the company that I just made a movie for, he's a fucking piece of shit. Like, you know.
I think the CEO of Disney probably has very little say over who actually gets cast in movies.
But I'm sure at the same time, if he really didn't like somebody, he'd be like, hey, we're not making another movie with your brother. Like I'm sure if he wanted, like, you know, it for him, I think he knows his brother was probably done with them anyway, because he's starting to work for DC now. But I just love that.
I'm sure the producers and executive producers that actually work in the creative realm are on the side of the actors. You know, I mean, they might be company people, but, you know, when we say executives, we're talking mostly about, you know, suits in a boardroom, not the people who are
like,
you know, green lighting, you know, because you look at like any movie that Brad Pitt's in, he's an executive producer too.
Yep.
Right. So it's, you know, but
it's not the Brad Pitt's of the world, but it's who Ron Perlman said, like the people who sit there and collect millions and millions of dollars a year and have never fucking created anything. They just, you know, people that matriculate into the film industry from other, you know, big fucking corporations, where the only qualification to get a job as an executive in the film industry is, hey, have you, you know, pretended to make money in some other industry for some other mega corp, publicly traded corporation?
Yeah. Hey, were you a hedge fund manager of a profitable Wall Street conglomerate? Okay, great. You can run Disney now.
Right. Absolute worst way to hire, you know, just the thing you see in just regular workplaces on steroids, where you know, have a place that'll hire externally versus from within. But, you know, this is like the worst reach of that sort of situation.
Right. If every person in the whole industry hates you.
right. Like, is it me? Is it me? Am I the asshole? No, it's everybody else. Like, it's not me.
The entire industry of Hollywood, it's their fault.
So one more clip we have regarding this actor strike is actually from the SAG union president. Shocked to me that this was the individual that was in charge of SAG, or, you know, as the president of SAG, is Fran Drescher, famously of the quintessential annoying 90s sitcom The Nanny. is the SAG president, which is amazing. We'll play a clip of her, and then we'll talk about her a little bit
longer clip, but it just kind of like puts a lot of this stuff in context, and it's also just fun to listen to a union president who talks like a New Yorker.
Yeah, no, her voice is not as annoying as it was on that show. That was definitely a put on. It's annoying in a different way, but it's pretty funny. So yeah, let's play that.
I cannot believe it, quite frankly, how far apart we are on so many things. How they plead poverty, that they're losing money left and right when giving hundreds of millions of dollars to their CEOs. It is disgusting. Shame on them. They stand on the wrong side of history at this very moment. We stand in solidarity, in unprecedented unity. Our union and our sister unions and the unions around the world are standing by us, as well as other labor unions. Because at some point, the jig is up. You cannot keep being dwindled and marginalized and disrespected and dishonored. The entire business model has been changed by streaming, digital, AI. This is a moment of history that is a moment of truth. If we don't stand tall right now, we are all going to be in trouble. We are all going to be in jeopardy of being replaced by machines and big business. Who cares more about Wall Street than you and your family? Most of Americans don't have more than $500 in an emergency.
So you mentioned something. 1980 came up. 1980 was the last time that SAG went on strike, and actually the last time that the WGA and SAG were on strike at the same time was 1960, when the president of the Actors Union was
famous leftist.
Famous union socialist Ronald Reagan.
So we can expect a nightmarish Fran Drescher, the Drescher regime, in the next 10 to 20 years, I think.
Right. So 1960 and 1980 are critical years because those were both years where there was a brand new technology that was coming into the forefront of media, that these studios were making tons of new profits from. Right. But the workers were not getting to share. 1960, it was television.
Color. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Television.
Yeah. I mean, TV started coming out in like 1955, so it took a little bit of time, right?
It was also when they popularized both color television, color film, and what was it called? Spectravid? Like the initial incarnation of widescreen. I believe it was called Spectravision. I have to look it up, but
talking about Panavision.
Panavision. Fuck, I don't know why I had Spectravision on my brain. But
hey, you got to film Spartacus. You got to have a wide fucking frame.
But and that was like the first. You start to see, especially if I've been watching a lot of movies from that right around the late 50s, early 60s era, and that's something that you just it's a crapshoot whether or not it's going to be in 133:1 ratio right. versus like a nice 185:1.
And then in 1980, it was VHS tape and cable TV. Those were the two new techs that were coming in. So at each time there's been major strikes like this, it's because there was a new technology that the industry did not want to share profits from. And right now it's streaming, right? And they've all, doubled down on these streaming wars that now are making them lose money. And instead of, trying to not blow a bunch of money on a thing that is completely oversaturating the market, they're saying, no, we want to punish the workers. It's not our fault. We all had to go to war with each other. But now that we're losing money on basically this huge boondoggle, it's the workers that are going to be punished here. Right. But history is on the side of the workers, right? Like if that's why you have a strike, because you can only show reruns for so long. Like, you got to make something new. That's why there's things that, you know, just constantly being filmed and shot and written and created. So this is just, I mean, amazing to me. It's the first time that, you know, all of Hollywood is shut down all at the same time since 1960, like since 20, you know, decades before I existed. This hasn't happened. So yeah, this is an interesting historical moment, and you know, hopefully nobody actually loses their home other than the Bob Igers.
By the way, I realized why I kept thinking Spectrevision, because my fucking job is it just seeps into every aspect of my consciousness now. But that's, we actually use a spectroscope at my job to analyze color on things that we print. It's like a spectrometer where you can sort of make sure that what you're printing and the ink you're producing is in line with the Pantone color you're trying to achieve.
So it wasn't porno vision?
No. That's Spectrevision. But no, it basically is like, it gives you like a threshold of like plus or minus a certain percentage, and you have to get within that range to get an acceptable reading, basically. But
fascinating.
So I you know, it is to an extent if you're into like art and design and shit like that, but
yeah,
not really my strong suit. But what was the point I was going to make? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just hearing all these quotes, it's amazing. And you know that President DeSantis is going to bring back the House on American Activities Committee and the fucking, you know, like that's we are mere, you know, months away, I'm sure, from a President DeSantis bringing back the fucking Hollywood Red Scare. And, you know, luckily the suits, as shitty as they are, I don't think would be that bought in. I don't think the country at large would be that bought into like a blacklist anymore. I think it's more or less just like you said, they're going to try to do whatever they can to freeze them out in negotiations. I don't think it's in vogue to just go that reactionary right wing anymore, but I guess we'll see. I don't know. You know, it'd be interesting to see.
Well, everyone supports the people that entertain them.
Yeah.
Vastly more than they support the people who keep jacking up the price of all their streaming services that they have grown to love.
And that's probably what they didn't have in the 50s. I mean, I'm sure, you know, people appreciated, you know, entertainment stars, but there was still that mentality that, you know, when you talk to people who are young at that time, that boomer mentality of like, oh, well, they should just shut up and, you know, entertain me. That kind of like the conservative thinking that was baked into their psyches by their parents. Like, I'm sure that was there, so they had zero solidarity whatsoever. Where,
well, it's social media too. People feel much closer to the actors and writers and entertain them, because it's like, oh, it humanizes them in ways where you feel like you could just, you know, fucking tweet at some person that made a show that you love and they might reply to you, you know. Right. So it's like, it really is a sort of, you know, common thing.
Great equalizer. So, until Elon Musk came in and fucking broke it into 6 million pieces and constantly finds a new way to break it. But, you know,
I had one other little Hollywood tidbit of information. Mm-hmm. I don't really have anything else on the Hollywood strikes right now, but I saw this headline. Charles Manson follower Leslie Van Houten released from prison after 53 years.
I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess she wasn't at the Sharon Tate house. She was at the other house.
Oh, the first murder they did.
Yeah. So just one paragraph here. Van Houten was 19 when she participated in the August 10th, 1969 murders of Lino LaBanchi, a wealthy grocer, and his wife, Rosemary LaBanchi, at their Los Angeles home. I'm assuming it's also up in the hills. The LaBanchas were both stabbed to death, and the word war was carved on Lino LaBanchi's stomach. Hmm. Just really gruesome shit. Yep. Yeah. But, I mean, apparently Gavin Newsom tried overturning her parole several times, and finally, like, the state of California just, like, stopped appealing it. And said, "Okay, you're out."
Didn't he just do that with Sirhan also recently?
Probably.
I feel like I remember hearing that, like, his parole got overturned. I'm pretty sure it was new. I think he's in California, in their state prison system. But
it's the guy that shot Bobby Kennedy, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think his parole was just overturned recently, but successfully overturned. Like, he's still in jail, I believe, but. Yeah, Hinckley got out at least, so, you know, there's some justice in the world, but...
Yeah, except that I didn't get to go see him play guitar because the venue fucking booted
fucking
him.
Fucking coward. It, yeah.
I had a ticket. I fucking bought a fucking ticket for that shit.
I know.
And
I know.
They canceled it and it had to get refunded to me.
Fucking.
But yeah, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about this on the show.
He should just just buy a flatbed and roll around with a fucking amp and a guitar. And just, I'm sure a couple hundred people would show up in major cities if he did that.
I bet they would.
Until he gets shut down and beat the shit beaten out of him by a bunch of fucking right wing, you know, MAGA cops. But whatever.
I'm sure he got a lot of threats and decided just to, you know, pack it in.
Let's not sugarcoat. He's a weird fucking guy. I mean, he's, you know, there's definitely not a guy I'd want to hang out with personally. I just appreciate his work. That's all I'm saying. You know, I appreciate
his early hits were some of the best.
I very much appreciate his attempted contributions to society. I only wish that he had better aim. But
I had a couple other things here too. You saw the Jonah Hill tweets or the Jonah Hill texts?
Oh God.
From his ex. Did you see that shit?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's so, you know, obviously he's clearly like a manipulative psycho. I also though just don't like the fact that we see any of these. Like, we don't need to be seeing people's it's just the whole idea of like living a public life in general, where it's just like you feel like it's fair game to sort of on either side, sort of like when you get out of a relationship. Like, I don't know. I guess it's kind of the nature of the beast. If your sort of split is public, then you don't want the perception to be like that you're one. It just feels gross to me when we see shit. It's very violating.
Your career is built on fame, and you know that anything published about you, say in private, is going to be tabloid news. Don't say fucked up controlling shit.
Oh no. I mean,
dating,
you know, 100%. I just, in general, anytime I see stuff like, and maybe it's even less celebrities I have the issue with versus like just random minor, like notable figures on Twitter that you see shit like that about all the time, where they get out of a relationship or someone's like, hey, just so you know, blah, blah is a fucking asshole. And blah, like, I don't know. It just makes me a little squeamish, but
I don't like, you know, personal beefs, you know, especially when it's something private that you said to somebody, but like this really, it's not about that to me.
Yeah.
It's the fact that, you know, it's somebody who, you know, the thing that you are attracted to about a person. And then once you get them, you demand they stop doing it, right? Because this woman was a surfer, right? And that was like what,
a surf instructor, like it's her job, not even like her hobby, like it's literally her job,
right? And she has an Instagram account and posted pictures of her surfing in a swimsuit, as any surfer would. And so he sent her this huge just like string of texts, not even like a you know nice form letter, but just text after text after text after text after text. And he's told her she's not allowed to surf with men, which basically means you're not allowed to surf, right? There's always going to be guys on the beach. She's not allowed to model. Apparently she was doing modeling. Not allowed to post pics of herself in her swimsuit. And not allowed to have female friends if they party.
Those first three things arguably are like her sole sources of income. So like, you're just basically like, hey, you're not allowed to have any sort of financial independence whatsoever.
But this is the insane controlling part, is that he said that this list of things she's not allowed to do are his boundaries.
Those
were his boundaries.
Right.
No, those are boundaries you're trying to put on her, and you don't get to do that. Especially, you don't get to pretend that those are your boundaries. Those might be things you're insecure about, but those are not boundaries.
Right.
Right.
That's just demands. That's
the thing that really, exactly. You're trying to control someone else's boundaries, not have your own boundaries right there. And the fact that he's misusing the word in that way is the really scary part to me.
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. So,
and I'm not saying he's like the worst person in the world, but I'm saying that like what he was doing there is something that I'm sure many other men do and think that that's okay to do. And it's not.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that's, you know, just people get really fucking jealous and controlling and just,
yeah. I shouldn't say men do, because I'm sure that there are women who have done similar things and the things that they have said to their partner, male or female, what have you. But yeah, it's probably more prevalent with men than women.
To
a degree.
I'm sure.
Let's see. I had a couple other headlines here before we get to the Zelensky thing. This is I've been just having a ball with, you know, the Titan Subway shit. Just all the YouTubers that have gotten in on this. We've talked about this endlessly, but you know, everyone's been kind of like squeamish about talking about, you know, like what's left of their remains, right?
Right.
At least in mainstream media, but YouTube, you could talk about anything you want there. And so I've seen videos on this from engineers, from lawyers, from shipping experts, from you know, old timey maritime experts, and then I saw one from an osteopath, a bone doctor, basically. Yep. Yeah, yeah. And I'm just gonna read the title of his YouTube video: "Crushed, Burned, or Toothpaste? Surgeon explains what happened to the crew OceanGate Titan sub implosion." Hey, basically, it's like, were they crushed to death? Were they incinerated, or were they just turned into some sort of mixture of toothpaste? And it wasn't even really a conclusive video. He couldn't really kind of nail down exactly what the final result would be. He said there's too many, you know, other factors to know exactly, but there would be, you know, basically 785,000 pounds of weight being dropped on you at 1,500 miles per hour. So just a
lot.
Well, that they said that'd be like the Empire State Building falling on you.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Not ideal. Not ideal at all.
Let's see. One other headline here. This is an amazing headline, not because of what happened, but okay, let's read the headline. A California man who became paralyzed after a run-in with the police is getting $20 million settlement in a deal announced Tuesday, Associated Press. A man who became paralyzed after a run-in with police.
Oh, what happened? Did he trip and break his neck?
That has to be the all-time record for passive voice I've ever heard.
That's brutal.
How did he become paralyzed? Yeah, they slammed him on the ground so hard that it broke his spine, is what happened there. Let's see. Writer's strike, Disney. All right, so I wanted to talk about this, the Zelensky having a fucking shit party, but there was one more video I wanted to play, and this is from a UPS driver. UPS Teamsters maybe going on strike, which would be, you know, the SAG is 160,000 actors. UPS Teamsters Union is 340,000, right? They're like 20% of all the packages delivered in the country. So if they go on strike, shit is going to hit the fan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine the logistical nightmare that would create, which is why you should probably pay them what they're fucking asking for.
Right. Which is why a strike is effective.
Yeah.
Because it shuts everything down.
Yeah.
I saw this headline from CNN. The U.S. economy can't function smoothly without UPS. That's why a strike will hurt. And somebody took it in Photoshop, just changed it to cut out the word hurt and put work. That's why a strike will work.
Right. Oh, so, God. All right, yeah. So let's play this audio from one of these UPS drivers.
Yeah, 42 an hour is definitely not enough. Even the company thinks so. That's why we're getting a raise. Yeah, we're going to get a raise, and we do every year. It's about $1.40 to $1.50 every year, and it's going to be higher around this one. We're not going on strike because the drivers aren't getting their raise. You know, our raise has already been negotiated. The full-timers, the drivers, like, we're going to get ours. We're, you know, 42 is not enough, and we're going to get more than that. We're going on strike because the part-timers are only making 16 an hour, and that's unacceptable. And I will stand next to my part-time brothers and sisters and make sure they get theirs on this one, too. And I'll sacrifice 2 weeks of work if it has to, because that's what solidarity is. That's what we do, all right? And how the hell do you think we got to 42 anyways? By sitting back and accepting 35? Nah. No. We demanded what was ours, and that's what we're doing now. And 42... that's what it is now. In August, when that contract gets signed, we'll have more than that, and it's going to keep going up every year because their profits go up every year.
Yeah, so that was a driver responding to somebody saying, no way you deserve $42 an hour as a delivery guy. It takes zero skill. it takes a shitload of physical endurance to deliver thousands of packages a day.
Yeah.
Like, you're running you might be driving the truck, but you're running your ass off from the truck to you know, door to door to door, and in some cases, you know, up several flights of stairs, elevator, whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's like I didn't know they made $42 an hour, but I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, I absolutely. No, and if I had to wear that brown monkey uniform, I would definitely demand more than 42.
Yeah, and because they have a union, they actually have air conditioning in those trucks. They for a long, long time they had no air conditioning in those trucks. Much like the post office doesn't have air conditioning in those trucks, because even though they're right. unionized, they still have to rely on public funding. And you know, conservatives for decades have tried to do everything they can to slash their funding to the bone, so their drivers literally, you know, fucking pass out from heat exhaustion. Literally, a USPS driver died, I think, earlier this summer from fucking heat stroke because he overheated in his.
I saw a video of a guy who collapsed, but I didn't hear anyone had actually died from that. But I wouldn't be surprised with as hot as it is. The hottest 3 days in recorded human history was last week.
Yeah, yeah, which is, yeah, it seems totally normal that we keep having these once-in-a-century weather events and weather situations every couple weeks or so. That doesn't seem at all like a sign of the apocalypse.
So just here in Chicago, in the last 2 weeks, we had 2 days of emergency air quality because of the wildfire.
Yep.
We had record flooding, had 9 inches of rain in one day. I had to drive my girlfriend's car, and at 4 different times I had to stop and turn around because the road was so flooded. And then we just had tornado sirens like multiple times in one day, just this week. And that's just 2 weeks in Chicago.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine what it's like down in Texas right now.
No, absolutely. Yes. So I just looked it up. So earlier, this year, actually, not long ago, a couple weeks ago, kind of last couple weeks of June, a North Texas mail carrier died after passing out from heat exhaustion during his route in Texas, where the heat index that day was 115 degrees. He was taken to the hospital and he later died. So 66 years old. But yeah, it's just, you know, there's just no fucking reason. Like, there's just no reason. So many things in this country are needlessly cruel and hostile to the people that actually make them work. And if you, you know, ever look at someone else's pocket and say, man, they make too money, you're a fucking asshole. And you should be saying, yeah, they deserve that money and I deserve more than I'm making. That's what you.
Well, that's why Marx talks about the alienation of one's labor. Yeah. Right. Because the idea is to make the job miserable so you don't value what you do of yourself. So you don't feel like your labor has meaning and worth and merit. And if you don't feel that way, you're less likely to organize a union, right? So Marx talks about this a bunch, that jobs are designed to be miserable on purpose.
Yeah.
For that reason. So, yeah. So I have one last thing I wanted to get before we hop out of here. And this is jumping gears a bit, but just a little Ukraine update. This headline, the headline alone cracked me up, but I am going to read a little bit more than just the headline. Zelensky says, uncertainty over Ukraine's NATO membership motivates Moscow to continue terror. Like, what uncertainty is there about Ukraine's NATO membership? They aren't a NATO member. Right. There's absolute certainty about it because it doesn't exist. So I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. But he's like pretending as though they're a de facto member because they're fighting this proxy war from NATO, right?
Yep.
So Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky said Tuesday that uncertainty over whether the North American Treaty Organization, NATO, alliance will offer admission to Ukraine motivates Russia to continue terror in its war on Kiev. So first of all, Ukraine already applied to become a NATO member, and France and Germany said no fucking way because you're in the middle of a civil war. And that's one of like 5 conditions that you don't meet.
Right.
That's a requirement of being a NATO member, because after the 2014 coup, they started bombing the shit out of the Russian half of the country, killing their own people, you know, which has always been our excuse for invading the country, right?
Yep.
Doesn't apply there, apparently.
No, that's sort of looked down upon for potential NATO membership. Yeah.
No, but this conflict clearly started in 2022, February. You know, nothing ever happened before that would provide context to what's going on.
Nope.
So he says here, this is Zelensky's own words, it seems there is no readiness neither to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance. That's the same thing. I don't know what is it.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever. He continues here. This means that a window of opportunity is being left to bargain Ukraine's membership in NATO in negotiations with Russia. Okay. And for Russia, this means motivation to continue its terror. Clearly they don't like Ukraine joining NATO is unacceptable to Russia, but it wasn't going to happen anyway. So why would that be a thing that they would care anyway? It continues. Uncertainty is weakness, the Kiev leader added. Again, there is no uncertainty, right?
It's very certain you're not going to be allowed in. And that was the whole thing that even Biden had stipulated from the start.
Right.
Although he just activated a bunch of National Guard and sent them to Europe. So that's a really comforting thought.
Right.
But
Zelensky on Tuesday said Ukraine has, quote, received signals that certain wording is being discussed without Ukraine. So apparently he thinks he's the fucking main character of this, and he's just a fucking puppet. He also bashed NATO for not setting a timeline for Ukraine's ascension into the alliance. Again, there is no timeline.
No, you're ascension. I mean, what a fucking, it's amazing that this organization that they claim was ostensibly set up to fight fascism, even though it was obviously set up to fight communism, uses such fascistic, that's the word I was looking for, fascistic verbiage and sort of imagery when they talk about these things.
It really does. So his last quote here, it's unprecedented and absurd when a time frame is not set, neither for the invitation for Ukraine's membership. That's a weirdly worded quote, sorry. While at the same time, vague wording about conditions is added, even for inviting Ukraine. There hasn't been any invitation. I don't know what he's talking about. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul said Sunday that Ukraine shouldn't be admitted to NATO immediately because doing so would put all the allies at war with Russia under the treaty's provision that an attack on one NATO member is considered an attack on all.
Not that into you, bro. Like, just get the fucking hint. Like, I don't understand
He doesn't seem to get that the reason why they're having him fight the war is because he's not a NATO country.
But you know what?
That's the whole point.
He rightfully realizes that the only thing keeping him alive right now, long term, is the promise of potentially joining NATO, getting this alliance put together where NATO will come in and wipe out, you know, the forces that are trying to take back some of this Russian territory in the Ukraine right now. He knows that these fucking Nazi psychopaths that are, you know, standing over his shoulder at all times, may very well blow his head off when it's made clear to them that there's no fucking hope of winning and that there's no hope of any sort of cavalry, you know, in terms of the U.S. intervening.
Yeah. He'll have to flee to Poland eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, I really think that's probably what his
But here's the thing.
Is.
If you're Russia, you know, you could wipe out Ukraine pretty quickly. But if you create like a low-level quagmire war that you know the U.S. will love to keep going, you know, and you never really push that far into the country, but you're still technically at war, Ukraine's never going to become a NATO member state, ever.
No.
So that could very well be Russia's long-game strategy, is just we'll make sure that Ukraine is slightly always at war, and we'll never have to worry about them being able to join NATO.
Yep. Yep. No, absolutely, 100%. Yeah. So,
and maybe Zelensky really does understand that, and that's the thing that he can't, you know, that's pissing him off, you know, that he really wants everyone else to have to fight for him, and he doesn't like being a puppet. He's like, it's finally sinking into his head that this is the reality of it. So yeah, he apparently went to this NATO conference or sent people from, he was supposed to meet with Biden directly. So it's like, he literally just like, hey, maybe if I keep showing up, they'll let me hang out.
Dog, you're not on the fucking team. Like, give it up.
Seriously. No one even wants to give you money anymore. Even Israel's just like, yeah, no, you just do your thing.
Not right. Gonna. The ultimate, like, oh, poor us, give us some money, fucking country, is like, yeah, no, we know exactly what you're doing. we're pretty fucking hip to this game. Yeah, no, it's just fucking ridiculous. But you know, it is what it is. It'll keep happening until they decide that, you know, either it's Biden or whoever decides it's not, you know, worth our while anymore to keep the charade up, or until some, you know, someone else gets elected that decides to stop the fucking gravy train, which very well may happen with Trump. That may be like the one kind of good thing he does in his second term is get his fucking cut off support to Ukraine. I can imagine how that would go over. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting, I think.
It'd be hilarious if, like, you know, we cut off support to Ukraine and then Russia just fucking packed it up and left immediately afterwards. that would be the biggest own. Liberals would lose their fucking... Trump becomes president. They're going to lose their minds. He cuts off funding for Ukraine and Russia retreats. Liberals would fucking shit a hole through the floor.
Oh, that would that would be incredible. The
every Russiagate conspiracy theory they ever thought they believed would just come raging back like a fucking burst dam. Oh man, at that point.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to hear all the new ones. That'll be fun for another 4 years.
I've been trying to come up with OceanGate conspiracy theories. Like, what did the guys on those that collapsed submarine know about Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh my God! Yeah, all right.
You know, like somebody out there has to be sitting here going, like, there's too much scientific factual stuff going on to this story. I'm going to make up some fucking bullshit just to stir the pot.
Just to close this out, this is another fun, hilarious thing going on right now. And just the fact that conservatives are the stupidest people in the history of the planet. You know, we say that a lot, but it's funny when you see these like real time examples of the fact that they're just like completely brain dead, like with this whole what's that movie called? The Jim Caviezel movie. It's like something Angel. Something.
Oh, the Sound of Freedom.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's like Angel Studios is the Christian film company that produces it, I believe. So, the Sound of Freedom. A bunch of conservatives are posting videos online. I saw one where they were, you know, where two white people, of course, a blonde, not an artificially blonde woman, and a really douchey looking guy were walking back to their car after seeing the film. And they were complaining about how the lights were left on during the film, which I'm sure that just means like the usual thing they do where they kind of leave like dim lights. And then like the AC wasn't working, which again, if you've been to a movie theater, especially an old one, is like a 50-50 chance of something you would encounter. But of course, to them, everything is their oppression, because when you're not oppressed, you seek oppression anywhere that you can find it. So that was, of course, you know, the very evil communist film, you know, the movie theater employees and or owner trying to make them miserable.
So basically, they're saying that being mildly uncomfortable was a conspiracy to sabotage the Christian movie.
Oh, and the best one I just saw before we went on air, and fucking that just complete brain dead fucking twit libs of TikTok, that woman tweeted it out that she was seeing Sound of Freedom in a movie theater where the tickets were sold out, but she was the only one in the theater. And I'm like, you're literally missing the point. Is that the fact that this is the most astroturf fucking film of the last 20 years? And yes, I'm sure the theater was sold out because a bunch of fucking rubes that give you money every month, you know, for your Patreon or whatever the fuck, you know, Ponzi scheme that you're running, donate to this fucking film company to buy a bunch of tickets for non-existent fucking moviegoers to this movie so they can claim it's the number one movie in America, which it is right now this week, I heard, which is fucking hilarious because nobody's seeing this fucking movie. It's just right. It's
so
incredible.
What they're trying to say is that somebody, you know, purchased all the tickets so that nobody could purchase tickets and actually see it.
I think her implication is, well, the theaters are saying it's sold out, so nobody comes. Because, you know, theaters famously love to not make money by, you know, showing a movie to an empty theater and not actually selling the tickets. That's something that happens.
That's just how sneaky the left is, you know.
They're playing the long game, guys. You know, it costs them some money up front, but you know, hearts and minds is what they're after.
So even though they were being given free tickets, not enough Christians were going to see this movie.
Because it's a fucking Christian film. It's dull
had
as shit.
To figure out a reason for it to be some kind of plot against them, rather than literally being an astroturf to help them fill the theater so they could go see it for fucking free.
Right. And the funny thing is, like, theoretically, if you wanted to run the scam, you could still just give away free tickets of like, hey, here, you know, route the tickets through our website. We will, you know, basically buy them for you in real time and you can, you know, we'll work something out with the theater. But because they need to make it the number one movie in America, they actually need to purchase the tickets, whether there's demand or not. So they do have to literally buy the physical tickets for showings in the hopes that somebody will claim the free tickets. And when they don't, you would literally you end up with these empty theaters because nobody wants to see this stupid fucking Christian film. And then you get a situation like that. So,
I mean,
it's fucking hilarious.
And how do you prove that she was actually in the theater for the screening of that film at the time it was about to play? Like, you could have just walked into any empty theater room taken the same video.
I believe that her situation actually did happen because I'm sure that's happening all across America because it's allegedly the number one movie in America. Meanwhile, I can't imagine that anyone, you know, outside of a few fucking just sun poisoned fucking Floridians actually went to see the stupid movie. The only way that can happen is if they are truly just buying tickets and to give them out, but nobody's fucking taking them. So it's
even,
just empty
even
theaters.
Christians know better than to go watch a fucking Christian movie because they're just like, look, yeah, well,
it's framed as
some crazy shit, but we'd prefer to have, you know, mainstream entertainment.
And it's framed as like the protect our children shit that you hear out of the new breed of like the super conspiracy minded fucking right wing. So it's not even framed as a Christian film, even though it's made by a Christian film company. But
yeah, what is the sound of freedom? Turns out it's still guns.
Right. No, literally. I'm just reading the synopsis on Google here. After rescuing a boy from ruthless child traffickers, a federal agent learns the boy's sister is still captive and decides to embark on a dangerous mission to save her. With time running out, he quits his job and journeys deep into the Colombian jungle. Uh-oh. Communists, putting his life on the line to free her from a fate.
Well, I mean, they're like far right authoritarian in Colombia, but they probably portrayed them.
But you know what I mean? Like, but they're in the jungles of Colombia. So it's going to be some sort of, you know, guerrilla left wing militia group. It's not going to be the actual Colombian government.
Right. They don't even have lawns. It's just pure jungle down there. It's anarchy.
They're actually like reverse review bombing this movie somehow. Like, it's got 8.3 on IMDb, which is a crazy score for almost any film. But, you know, like, 99% of these reviewers did not see this fucking movie. They just 10-starred it. Like, there's no fucking way.
No, yeah. I have high hopes for a lot of movies, but it's, you know, like, I read a review of this movie, and it was not. They said even just as a regular movie, it sucks.
Yeah.
Like even if it wasn't like a, you know, Christian Trojan horse, this movie is fucking boring. But yeah, it's amazing the lengths that people will go to try to make entertainment appealing when it's something that nobody really wants, you know, and they still can't even execute it well. Like, look at like just the, even just the trailer for Indiana Jones 5, the chase scenes where you can tell it's just, once again, all CGI, fucking boring as hell. I mean, the reason why that chase scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark was amazing is because it's all practical, right? And then look at the chase scenes in the fucking new Mission Impossible movie where, you know, there's no CGI, that it's all fucking practical. You know, that Tom Cruise is really riding his motorcycle off a fucking mountain, you know, and it's just like people are going to go see that movie in droves.
Yeah, because it's one of the last, you know. The great thing about him, despite all his fucking weirdness, is that he's just truly devoted to almost killing himself by doing increasingly crazy stunts to escape the Church of Scientology.
And people look at it.
It's amazing to watch, like the action that he actually.
Right. And that was one of the big criticisms about Flash. Everyone said the CGI looks like shit and people are tired of looking at looks like shit CGI.
No,
they want to see real shit that was actually filmed that they think. I don't know how they actually pulled that off,
right? Which was the whole reason you used to go to action movies, and that's the plot that's been completely lost by studios who are just trying to make, you know, increasingly complex fucking shit.
And it's not the animators. It's not the animators' fault either.
No, of course not.
It's
being,
you know, all
grinded
these,
down.
All these animation houses are trying to low bid each other into getting the contracts by over promising what they can produce.
Yep.
Right, and then you know they get. Some animator gets thrown this thing and says, oh, hey, I need you to, you know, you've got 2 weeks to do this. And it's going to be, you know, like we told them this would take 2 weeks.
There
and
are
like that would take 4 weeks. There's no way it's going to look good. And they're like, whatever.
There are movies
getting paid.
Their just movies, make it. Yeah. Their movies from 2007.
Just copy and paste Nicolas Cage's face onto Superman. We'll call it good.
Their movies from 2007 that look 10 times better, CGI effects that look 10 times better than movies you see today. Because back then, when it was still a relatively new technology, studios kind of understood that, like, yeah, these things take time. Like, you know, as shit as Transformers is as a story or as a film or whatever, the effects in that movie look better than any CGI, any big budget blockbuster you're going to see today, because they actually, you know, did take time to animate that, you know, and spent, you know, a couple of years putting that together and not rushing it out in like a 6 month, you know, crunch fucking window. It's just night and day. But yeah, I think that does it for us this week. Yeah, you know, if you want to support the show, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/moveleft, facebook.com/moveleftidiots, patreon.com/moveleft. I am on Twitter at @move_left, and he is on Twitter at @bikeslutty. And yeah, we will see you next week.
Scab, or will you be a man?
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?